So I got a haircut yesterday. I think it looks, you know, I think I look like 10 years younger when I get a haircut. I don't look like dad on a WB show. Does WB even exist anymore? I don't know, Google it, kids. There used to be a TV station called the WB Network. WB. CW? I don't know. Anyway. So we got the babysitter at home. Sarah is off running and doing some errands, and we're going to meet up and have like a Saturday date. Maybe go to Target. try to, like, you know, connect. We haven't been connecting. It's hard to connect. But listen, I just want to vent something quickly because this happens a lot. And for anyone that's listening out there, that's it generally happens with mothers or grandmothers, women, where they do this thing where I'll be going in a public place, walking into the grocery store or something with my two little girls. And, you know, it's winter here, whatever. It's Vermont. It's Vermont. You're Vermont tough. If you live in a cold place, you know, you're... you don't bundle up all the time in and out of the car, walk around. You know, you have your flannel thing on, your whatever you call it, and the girls will have their Elsa dresses, of course, because that's all they wear. You know, and it's not bone chilling. It's not sub-zero or 8 degrees with a wind chill of minus 20. It's like 32, 34, 40 degrees. We're walking to the... And I get this a lot. Oh, they love the girls because they're so cute. Oh, you're so cute. Are you cold? Are you cold? It's so fucking passive aggressive, first of all. Just, no, they're not cold. Oh, I'm just a stupid penis person who doesn't know how to take care of my daughters. And I put them in danger of frostbite because they're not wearing a fucking parka and gloves and mittens walking the 6 seconds across the parking lot from the warm car into the warm supermarket. Like, I'm sorry, but it's really annoying. Be quiet. No, they're not cold. I'm not cold. Are you cold? I don't know. Are you cold? I'm happy to go to the car and get you a jacket if you're cold. I know how to raise my daughters, okay? They're not cold. Listen, I get it from my wife. It's fine. My wife wants to, I mean, it's annoying, but you know, when she does it too, but I get it. She's allowed, okay? You're not allowed. If you're just a person out in the world, you're not allowed. Just be quiet. Shut up. Worry about your own temperature. I'm sorry, it's a little aggressive, but... And also, like, you never get that from a dude, right? I've never once in my life had a guy, some, like, burly Vermont lumberjack dude coming out of the Stop and Shop go, look at my daughters and go, are you cold? Are you cold? First of all, if you want to say it to me, ladies, just don't passive aggressively go through my daughter to get to me. Just look at me. Say what you mean. Mean what you say, say what you mean, right? We'd have a much better world. Look at me and say, I'm concerned your daughters are too cold and that they're going to get frostbite and die. Say that. Then we can have a conversation. I'll say, okay, I appreciate you have that fear. You know, I got this. That's what my daughters say, both of them, the 2.5-year-old and the 5-year-old. They both say that. I got this, Dad. I got this. They won't put on a jacket. We'll argue in the car. Listen, I don't mean to come across like a dick, but, and I don't act like that to the ladies that say that, to me. I'm definitely a little surly. I mean, I definitely say, I go back passively, aggressively through my daughters. They're going to go through my daughters. I'm going to go through my daughters. So they look at my daughters and go, are you cold? Ooh, are you cold? And then I say, actually, I don't go through my daughters. I say, nope, not cold. Not cold. That's a good conduit for what I thought we could talk about this week, which is that, you know, I hear a lot, read a lot. Well, I read nothing and hear nothing, but that's euphemistic. You know, I hear a lot and read a lot. Anyway, I think a lot of people talk about, you know, how to treat the kids based on who the kids are, right? Like, it's got a, your daughter has a 4.5-year-old mind. This is how it operates. So this is how you should behave towards her. This is how you should treat her. Your daughter has a 2-year-old mind. This is how, developmentally, this is how they are. So this is how you are supposed to treat them. What I don't hear a lot about, which is way more important than that, I would say equally important, but no, it's more important, because it's the concept of, you know, it always like was weird to me when you'd hear on the plane, when the oxygen mask drop, put it on your face first and then put it on your child's face. That always seemed like really selfish, right? Like, why would they tell you to, I'm like going to put it straight on my kid's face, right? Like, save them, get them the oxygen. But it makes sense, because if you pass out and die, then your little kid might not be able to figure out or be able to reach the oxygen, or when you, if you're trying to put it on them and then you die and then you pull the oxygen mask out of the wall or whatever. They're like, you get yourself together and then you can help your child get themselves together. And they're going to be fine. They're not going to die in the 3 seconds it takes to go 1/1000, get 2 good breaths of oxygen, and then you put it on them. And then you got your wits about you. I guess you hold your breath while they're sucking on it, like, and you can hold your breath longer. Anyway, so you fix you before you can fix them. And the other notion is that I had a yoga teacher, really good yoga teacher, and he used to say, the yoga position begins at precisely the moment that you want to get out of it. Right? So you do, like, to the extent that life is easy, there's no problem. But it's like when the shit hits the fan, how am I going to behave? And that's when you're in it. And so, you know, you're doing some yoga position and you're like, this is fine. And then you stay in it a little longer, and then your thighs start to burn. You're like, okay, that's a little uncomfortable. And right then I want to stop, right? I want to stop. Although there is a counter to this argument, which I use a lot, which is if it's harder than eating cake on the couch, then it counts. Right? Because you got to give yourself credit. So like if I'm doing a workout and I really didn't want to be there, and it's no matter how pathetic and easy it is, I could be like, even out, not a walk, no judgment, but whatever. Listen, I'll go on walks as my workout now. I used to completely rail against people. Like, that's not a workout. Walking is just what you're supposed to walk. Listen, so again, that adage, that axiom that whenever you're annoyed at somebody else, it's what you do or what you're going to do, again, holds true. Now I walk, and that does count. Anything counts. But if it's harder than eating cake on the couch, then it counts as a workout. So if whatever I'm doing, even if I'm on the like Stairmaster or like going so slow, it's like it's a joke, or ask yourself this one question. Is this harder than eating cake on the couch? And the answer, if the answer is yes, then great, man. You're working out. That's a workout. That counts. So anyway, that's the sort of the other side of the flip coin of this argument, that life only starts when it becomes difficult. In a lot of ways, it does. So in this context, parenting starts precisely the minute I want to get out of it. Good parenting, right? It's easy. Everything's easy when it's easy. So forget them. Forget what their psyche is. What's my psyche? Because my psyche determines how I'm going to treat them. So again, like, that's why there's this big disconnect between what they all tell me of how I'm supposed to treat and act and react to my little kids, and why I can't do that a lot of the time. And then I feel awful and like I suck as a parent, like I'm terrible. And the disconnect is because it depends on who I am when I'm dealing with them, like anyone in the world. Who I am in that moment determines how I'm going to be able to behave. So if I'm hardwired because of my trauma, is a big word. I don't want to say, listen, my parents are great. I love them to death. They did the best they could with what they had. Zero resentment or anything like that to them, about them. But the fact is, you know, they were, because of who they were and how they were raised and what they brought to the table emotionally, psychologically, you know, there are buttons installed in me that I've had to work on in therapy and spiritual programs and, you know, that I continue to work on. You know, for me, it's like fear of abandonment. I get really, really angry if people don't listen to me. Like, check this out, right? It lines up so completely to be quick to anger with my little baby children, right? So my big ones are if people ignore me, if people don't listen to me, if people don't do what I ask them to do. Well, it's mainly listening. If you don't listen to me, if I'm being ignored, I go from 0 to 100 in terms of anger. So in trying to like get better about that over the years, which I have, and I am better, take deep breaths, realize, okay, you know, that I'm not the center of the universe, especially with my wife or the kids. Listen, as she said, the kids are in her mind 1,000% of the time. Whether they're there or not. If they're there, I get it. Listen, if you got one daughter, you're holding her, she's screaming, mommy, nurses, 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 and our other daughter is saying, come do a puzzle with me, come do a puzzle. Literally pawing, grabbing at her. She's trying to like make her coffee with one arm because the baby's, I get it. Okay, like, don't be an idiot. I'm not going to be another baby saying, but honey, I want your attention. But I sort of do. I sort of do want to, because I don't see her that much, so she walks in the door and I want to tell her everything. But see, this is why I digress and it doesn't devolve. It's not a de-evolution. This is life. This is parenting, right? It all folds into each other. You can't just talk about one specific thing, because that's why it gets tricky with these books and stuff, because you'll hear it. It makes total sense on the podcast or the book. Oh, next time my child yells, I'm going to know that she's got a 4.5-year-old brain and she's just sad and frustrated that I've asked her to turn off the TV. So I'm going to kneel down, get on her level. I'm going to say, honey, are you frustrated? Are you angry? Instead of, right? But it's not true because it's who I am in that moment. Historically, in that year, in that month, in that day, in that hour, in that moment. That all dictates and contributes a ton to how I'm going to be able to respond to her. And it's always changing. It's a completely moving target. So I bring to the table my historic stuff. Then a big one for me in this time in my life, right, with my career. Like I'm having like a fantastic career. Top, you know, tip of the iceberg, 1% of people that wanna do what I do and make movies and TV shows and stuff ever get to do it, you know, where anyone else ever sees what they do. I've gotten that. I'm very lucky. I've also worked my ass off. But do I want more? Do I want more people to be acquainted with my work or have the chance to and stuff? Sure. Is my age, is my gender, is my, what it is, being, I can't even think because the coffee hasn't fully kicked in, but whatever I am, I'm a middle-aged white man. So, you know, it's harder for people to see my stuff because it just is in the world we live in, you know, it's harder to get it made. It's harder to get it out there. You know, the best way to get it out there is to sit in a parking lot on a Saturday morning and do a podcast and get it out there and hope it gets some traction. You know, that's a far cry from a few years ago, having two TV shows, one on, you know, Stars, one on Showtime, and where millions of people watched every week. I mean, whatever. Okay. So I'm not crying about it. Just gotta pivot with the hand you're dealt. So it's fine. Anyway, it is harder. So would I like more people to see it? Sure. Do I start to think about legacy? That word is so scary, right? I mean, I'm 62, God willing, in good shape. Hope I live a lot longer, but you never know. And you start to think about this stuff. Like, hard for me not to have resentments, which are terrible and do nothing for me to help me or my world or, the, you know, about I'm ashamed to even say it because it's so petty. You know, like other people getting stuff that I don't get. You know, if that show that I made 15 years ago had slightly more viewers than the other one that they picked and they brought my show back, I would have made literally $200 million. But I didn't. But I really try to think too, and I believe this, like you don't know what's best for you a lot. I don't know. I certainly don't know what's best for me a lot. The butterfly effect, right, of the flapping its wings in Africa and changes the whole universe. I don't know what would have happened. Listen, I might have been I was very ill-equipped, I know that, to handle, like, the amount of money and success I had when I was 32, 35, you know. I have no money now and no success now. Well, the barometer of success, obviously. Like, I have my greatest successes in the world are my two kids. By far, right? How lucky am I that the universe, the spirit, you know, allowed me to be in the presence of these two angels. You know, see, and I get choked up every second to think about it. So it's funny because I've thought, like, I was super creative making movies and TV shows the first 30 years. We'll call it 20 to 50. Before 20, you're just a baby child. In your 20s, you're still a baby child, but you're learning a little bit, like, slightly. But then in your 30s, you start to be a person. So call it from 20 to 50, 20 to 55, that's 35 years, made a bunch of TV shows and movies. I still do it, but still then, so 55, now I'm creative in that I've helped create these two human beings. Can't be more creative than that. So I bring that stuff that I have, you know, whatever anger that I'd again try to work on and try to know, hey, if I'd gotten certain, be careful what you wish for, right? If I'd gotten certain things back then, I could be dead now. I could have, who knows what could happen. And try to be super grateful for what I have right here, right now, which is a ton. I'm so lucky. I'm so blessed. That's the headline. Gratitude list. Write a gratitude list every morning, you know, see what's really important. I do that, but still, I am who I am, and I can go down the rabbit hole, the dark rabbit hole. Anything can set me off. I see somebody else that I used to work with getting an Academy Award, you know, and I gave him his first job. Whatever. Okay, great. Okay, whatever. Good for him. Good. I gave him his first job because he was really good, and he should win an Academy Award. I don't begrudge him, but it's like, but where's my Academy Awards? I know. It just sounds so, even coming out of my mouth, I just want to suck the words back in because it's such a bad look. And I mean, it's a bad look to myself. I don't care what the look is to you guys, because if you're being honest, you identify with me. If you're judging me, it's because you're completely blind to your own behavior. God bless you. In some degree, I'm not saying we all do everything, but we all have, like, our you know, our defects of character. You know, we all have the things, something. My areas of strength are maybe not your areas of strength, and vice versa, you know. So on the particular day, listen, and money, I have enough money to pay the bills without worry, month to month. We can go on a vacation once a year for a week to the beach. I can go play some poker tournaments, you know, for low amounts of money and buy in. Sarah can go run her races that cost $200 about, like, lower middle class existence. And I'm completely content with that. Would I like more money? Sure. You know, I have a very up and down career. Like, I make a big chunk of money and then I don't get a job for 5 years. You know, that's just the nature of what I do. Baseline, I can have a perfectly, the kids can get what they can have toy, you know, like, nothing to complain about at all. But having said that, if I get a little influx of money, you know, and there's 10 or 12 grand in the bank account, as a little buffer, do I feel better? 100%. And I wish I didn't, because I know that we're fine, but I do. And so on that day, if I get some sudden unexpected 12 grand and, you know, from a job I did 10 years ago or whatever, so that it, like, if, you know, if some $2,000 tooth thing happens, or Sarah, you know, some unexpected thing that I don't feel like we're not gonna be able to pay the mortgage? Of course I do. And I think that's natural and normal, that I feel that I still have those attachments. I'm not a Zen Buddhist, you know, far from it. So on that day, it's easier for me to not react so angrily towards my daughter when she flips out and doesn't want to turn off the TV. I only think, and a lot of us, I only think in our fantasy of what would have happened if the good thing would have happened. It's always like this great story, right? Oh, all that would have been great. I would have got more money. I would have had a bad attitude. I would have gotten some awful thing, drove a car off a cliff going fast, getting mad because someone else had even more money. Like, you know, where does it end if that's the barometer of my success, is having things? It doesn't end anywhere. Good. So anyway, so I bring that angst of or trying to fight back that angst of like what's going on in the last 5 years. Then it's like, I have to pee really bad right now. Literally, then you have that body thing. How do I feel? I ate too much cake last night. I can't lose this 30 pounds. I was doing well for 4 days and now I slid back last night because I just said, fuck it, I'm going to have cookies and cake and ice cream. So I feel physically, I have a sugar hangover today. So I'm angry at myself. So this thing rings in my head that when I was like 35, I want to say, I loved my father. He died, as I've told you, suddenly of a stroke and the medicine they gave him to try to fix the stroke. Next week is when he died 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And so when I was 35, I went to visit him and we had this recurring, I always felt like he didn't like me. I know he loved me, but that he didn't like me, or it would go back and forth on a deep level that he wasn't proud of me, didn't love me. And I don't know, we ended up in the kitchen one night talking about it and had a real tough talk. And I don't know how it came up, but I was like, suddenly like, I've never been good enough for you. You know, and he said, you're right. You know why? Because you're not, and you never will be. And you know why that is? Because I hate myself. And so nobody could be good enough for me. Because I hate myself. I'm like, I don't know. He was crying, I was crying, and it was awful. But healing, because we finally got it out. And I say, like, you're never going to get better until you stand in the kitchen at 35 and have that talk with your mother or father or both. That's just my two cents. It helped some healing, you know, and we got past it, but those are the kind of talks that I had to have with my parents to start to get any kind of movement with them and start to heal some of the stuff, but it's still very slow going. You know, and when he died, we were in a very good place, you know, in a very good place. Mainly because I knew what to stay away from in terms of conversations with him, you know, not to get triggered and stuff. But that's the most important work that I need to do. That's the putting on the oxygen before I put it on her. So I have a ton of work to do before I even get into what her psyche is and how she's supposed to behave, because how I react to that has 100% to do with am I keeping in fit emotional, physical, spiritual condition. If it's true that good parenting starts the second I want to get out of it, I have to put myself in a position to be able to stay in it.